So now on Radio 3, In Tune with Sean Rafferty.
And a very good evening to you. Stephen Osborne tonight, hot from playing Mozart with the BBC Philharmonic here on Radio 3 this afternoon. And Andrew Lytton is my next guest. Very nice to have you on board again.
It's a pleasure for me.
Going back to your Royal Band, but meeting, I think, Szymon Trubczyński for the first time.
Indeed. We first set eyes on each other just Tuesday, and already last night we had our first concert. It was a triumph, really. He is quite remarkable, and a very nice guy as well.
Must be rather wonderful, still finding artists like that. It really takes one's breath away when you get someone who just is so at one with their instrument.
Absolutely, and it's just so inspiring for me. I mean, I think I'm 20 years older than he is, you know, and it's just so great to see what's coming along, you know, behind. It's fantastic, really.
You don't feel like elbowing him off the stool and playing yourself?
Well, we were teasing each other about the fact that, because I'm about to play the Ravel G major myself in 3 weeks' time in Bergen. I always play and conduct myself. I'm a bit selfish that way. But I said, why don't we switch places as an encore in the third movement? You know, really confuse everybody. But we thought better of it since we hadn't actually rehearsed it. Maybe it was a mistake to try in front of the public.
I can see. I think both of you would be up for it. Well, more non, but we have a little salvo for you, I think, from your old band here. You're conducting Bernstein, the Overture to Candide, and we should just say that's really what made you want to be a conductor. We're going to his concerts in New York and seeing him on the podium.
Absolutely. You have a great memory. Well, I was 10 years old growing up in New York City, and my mother thought it would be a good idea if I started going to these young people's concerts that Bernstein was conducting back then with the New York Philharmonic. And it wasn't the first one I went to, but probably the fourth one. He did Pines of Rome, and that piece just absolutely blew my mind. And the way he illustrated it and jumped up and down at the end, I just said, I got to do this. So it's fantastic for me, you know, 36 years later, still living my dream.
Oh, the sparkle of the Candide Overture by Bernstein, the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra under Andrew Lytton, who, of course, was the man at the helm from the tender age of 29 for many years. He's now rather grandly called Conductor Laureate. Yes. You're much too young to be called something like that.
Oh, no. It's so much fun, actually. And going back is always just old home week. You know, I see all my old friends again. And because we sort of all grew up together, we can start off where we left off. You know, so, you know, I go over to one couple's house one night for dinner, and the next night somebody else, and lunch, and we all catch up and, you know, trade pictures of everyone's children, and it's just really lovely.
Well, lovely familial feel. Yeah. Well, you've had a wonderful familial feel in Dallas, of course, for 12 years.
Absolutely.
And you leave in June. Mm-hmm. I think Bernstein's going to be on the final menu, isn't he?
Yes, it would have to be. As I was telling you while we were listening to Bernstein, yes, after 12 years, it's time to move on, and it's been a fantastic run. 3 European tours, including twice at the Proms, and 4 trips to Carnegie Hall, and 26 recordings, and 4 television shows. So it's really been, you know, a lot of achievements for an orchestra that had very little such exposure before I got there. So everything just sort of aligned properly, which was great during those 12 years. But anyway, the final program, which is in May, is a very light, short program comprising Chichester Psalms and Mahler 2.
Ah.
Yeah, might as well go out with a bang, I say.
Oh, actually, there won't be a dry eye in the house when you finish that.
Well, that's sort of the idea. Probably mine will be the wettest.
Well, quite right. Quite right, too. But then it must be difficult to sever those ties. But you haven't, of course, with Bournemouth, because you come back.
And I won't with Dallas. In fact, I think the title is slightly different, music director emeritus or some such thing. But I'm actually doing 3 weeks with them next season, starting in July. So I'll be back in July, in September, and in February. So, you know, it's much less of a responsibility. I just come in as a guest conductor, but it's awfully nice to have that sort of guaranteed continuing relationship.
Well, it's just interesting. You were being incredibly modest and saying, you know, it just happened to be this sort of confluence when you went there and how you got them to greatness. Dallas, you've done it with. Bournemouth are now, of course, absolutely stunning too, and in the good hands of Maren Allsop. So there must be some incredible secret. What is it? How do you get an orchestra from being all right to being right up there?
First of all, thank you for that compliment, but I think it's very much having a positive approach and working with what you've got to make it the best possible. Everybody has their limits, it's true, but you work so that we get to those limits and enjoy them for what they are. And, you know, I think what one winds up with is a real good feeling of everybody operating on all cylinders. And that's really what I think makes great orchestral playing and team building, if you will. And I'm now trying this out on my third orchestra, which is the Bergen Philharmonic in Norway. And British listeners will get a chance to hear us live in 07, which is the centenary of Grieg's death. Grieg being a native Bergen boy and also a former music director of the orchestra. That's our great calling card for 07. So we'll be coming through London then. And I'm very excited with how things are going up there, because we've recently started an active relationship with the Swedish label BIS, and recording all the symphonies of Mendelssohn. We just recorded the world premiere. Now, this is a toe-tapper. Kalevi Aho's new piece, which is a contrabassoon concerto. So I dare say you'll be playing that late at night on Radio 3 someday.
Well, you know, there's something to be said with those deep and delicious amber tones.
For those insomniacs out there, yeah.
But, how's your Norwegian, by the way?
Non-existent. I made very clear from the beginning, I will happily take this job, but do not expect me to learn your language. You change the vowel sounds every day. I swear, they change the benchmarks every day. And you know, the goalpost. I'm of course teasing, but there's so many different accents there. And just when I think I've got a word down, you know, that I can say properly, I say it to somebody and they go, "What?" So it's just much easier to speak English. Everybody speaks English as well, if not better than I.
And if, in the unlikely event of an incipient rebellion, you probably won't know until it's happened.
Exactly, exactly. But you know, the irony too of that orchestra is it's very international. We have in the Bergen Philharmonic 15 different nationalities, and it's 40% foreign. So most people speak English, you know, even to themselves, amongst themselves. The colleagues mostly speak English.
So. What a wonderful thing to be there, the great Grieg celebrations. That's
absolutely
true. All part of the master plan, no doubt.
Well, you know, whatever.
Well, we hear Ravel next, and it's going to be young Mr. Chipchesky, unless you, as I say, push him off the piano stool on the platform. But it's you, of course, with the Bowman Symphony Orchestra, and you directing from the keyboard. It can't be that easy a piece to direct from the keyboard, can it?
Well, the second and third movements really are, because they're in one tempo. Mm. It's the first movement that has some dodgy moments. And just last night, I was thinking to myself, gosh, it's so easy when you just stand and conduct, you know, rather than when you're sitting at the piano playing and trying and hoping that everybody comes in at the right spot. Of course, the orchestra and I were having a good laugh, because they remember back to these heady days of 1989 when we recorded this. We recorded this Ravel G major right after playing it at the prom. So it was, you know, a double memory, because every prom is an event to every orchestra and certainly every conductor. And I was, of course, a nervous wreck being soloist as well that night. But, you know, the recording came out very well. So I was pleased with the whole thing.
And what a wonderful piece it is. There's so many echoes here, aren't there? I suppose there's the jazz influence. He'd met Gershwin, but there are all the other household gods too, aren't they? Sort of Mozart, Scarlatti. They're all hovering there.
Absolutely.
Somewhere.
Well, he was open in confessing that this 34 bar melody, you know, came from Mozart, really. So you know, his homage to Mozart. And but he said something about the fact that it almost killed him trying to write this tune. I forget the exact quote.
Yeah, I think he talks about the second movement we're going to hear. He says that flowing phrase.
Nearly killed me. That's the quote, yes.
Well, that will give you some light comfort just every now and again when you think you're being overexploited. But it comes out, as you say, beautifully. Andrew, the keyboard will be looking slightly differently, because when you're directing, you must have to angle the piano and presumably take the lid off a grand piano.
Exactly. That's exactly what I do. And the piano's not perpendicular to the front of the stage, as one might imagine, but sort of at a 45-degree angle. So facing sort of the double basses, if you will, you know, and it works very well. It really does. But it's also a lot easier to do this kind of play conduct with your own orchestra, because they have a vested interest in it going right, you know. so it's really fun. And I mean, that as I mentioned earlier, that those sessions when we recorded that Ravel, and also the coupling with that no longer available disc, the Gershwin Piano Concerto, they were just so much fun. The orchestra was so supportive and sweet, and you can hear they played tremendously.
Time for a reissue, possibly.
That would be awfully nice.
Yes, I mean, quite right. You know, classics can't date. But that was recorded, you said, what, 89?
1989, yeah.
Yeah. Do you look back on recordings like that? And do you listen to your old recordings?
I very often do. One of my passions is high-end audio, actually. And so any excuse to play something, and very often I'll go back and listen to you know, one of my old recordings go, you know, that's really not bad, or, oh my gosh, I can't believe we released that. Fortunately, that doesn't happen too often. But talking about the past coming back to haunt you, there were a couple of Virgin Classics recordings we made, one with Bournemouth, one with the Royal Philharmonic, that never came out, and they suddenly appeared at my flat in London over the weekend, first edit. I mean, I practically dropped the post on the floor. And total shock out of the blue. These are 16-year-old sessions.
That's an interesting gestation period.
Yeah, I must say, so putting it on one album, of course, I'm thrilled is going to come out particularly, is this Franck. It's music of César Franck. And the Franck D minor symphony was actually the first piece I ever conducted with the Bournemouth Symphony back in March of 1984. And so it became sort of our little party piece. And so we finally recorded it, I think, in 1990. And the coupling for that, Andrew Keener, my best friend and producer, talked me into learning the symphonic variations, which I never actually performed in concert, but I did that from
a request.
Yeah, I did that from the keyboard. And so I was actually extremely eager to hear how that came out, because I had no idea, obviously, and all this time has passed. So I dropped the post once I got into the flat and put on the CD and forwarded to track 5. It's pretty good.
Oh, good. What a relief.
Yeah.
We can all get it.
That was one of those, like, okay, how good or bad is this going to be? But I think it's okay.
Well, I know the post sometimes takes quite a long time in this country. I think 16 years must be a record.
Well, this came from France.
Perhaps we haven't harmonized just about everything with our European brothers. What's the other one, then, the other recording?
Mahler 4 with the Royal Philharmonic and Anne Murray singing.
Oh, wonderful.
So, again, that was, I think, 1990 or something like that. So.
Good. Well, we'll keep an eye out for when they come out. I hope they get a blaze of publicity in the shops. Well, it's so much going on. But we finish with the last movement of Shostakovich 10, which you did in Dallas. Do you remember when you did this?
That would have been, I think, in 2000, because we had played it at the prom as well in 2000. Of course, we're doing Shostakovich this weekend in Bournemouth, and also next week
in
Birmingham.
Well, it is big year, after all.
Big year. It's a different symphony. I haven't recorded it, unfortunately. We're doing the 7th with Bournemouth and in Birmingham Wednesday.
Well, they're all searing, but that's particularly searing, isn't it?
I think it's particularly powerful in the time in which we're living, with this, you know, non-stop war going on, and you know, it is almost like a siege, really. And you know, I feel that it's music that grows in its intensity and relevance. It's a symphony that sort of fell out of favor for a while, but now I'm happy to say I'm part of the movement to bring it back. Because even though Beethoven wrote 9 symphonies, everyone has their favorite one. With Shostakovich, I have to say the 7th isn't my favorite one. I much prefer 8 and 10 and so on. But I still think it's a masterpiece, you know. It's really very exciting to play. And I have to say, the Bournemouth Symphony is doing a fantastic job with it. Last night was riveting for me. You know, it was really exciting. It was just like the old times. And that's why I love going back there. Because as soon as I step up on that podium, I feel young again.
The frisson is there. Yes. It really is. But I suppose 10, it must have been difficult for any composer, I suppose, to go on to number 10, that superstitious moment after 9, when Beethoven, after all, didn't get beyond 9, Bruckner didn't get beyond 9. But it's rather extraordinary. I suppose number 7 was fine. Everybody thought that was marvellous. 8th, everybody thought was too tragic. The 9th, after the war, they didn't think really was grave or full of gravitas enough. And number 10, he started, I think, it's the year that Stalin died. Mm-hmm. So there must be some sense of liberation in this symphony.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the second movement is, you know, has read that, oh, it's his depiction of Stalin. Whether it's his depiction of Stalin or not, it's 4 minutes of hatred unlike anybody else has ever depicted.
Yeah.
It's pure hatred, you know, and very, very exciting to conduct that and get an orchestra to really play it up at speed.
Yeah. Well, we had the last movement. All he said was, I think, about this symphony, even though he says lots of things, but he said, I wish to convey human feelings and passions, and you'll just have to make up your own mind. And there's certainly a great sear of optimism, but there's always that slightly sardonic side to Shostakovich, isn't there? And goodness knows what he went through. Mm. Why wouldn't you have that among the optimism, there's always this little warning bell, isn't there?
Exactly. And I mean, I think it's very much a victory with clenched teeth ending anyway. I mean, the fact that He brings in his initials, DSCH, DE flat CB, so powerfully in the final minutes of this symphony, to me is somebody raising their fist heavenward saying, I'm still here. You haven't gotten me yet. And you're not, by the way, Mr. Stalin. So, you know, I mean, listen, that's maybe my own silly read into it, but it helps me get through the piece and understand the piece and feel completely inadequate afterwards. So all of these symphonies, I mean, after last night's Seventh Symphony performance, I just wanted to somehow crawl away and go back to a dark room, you know. Instead, you have to sort of turn around and accept the applause, which I have to say were very, very nice. But, you know, this feeling after you've finished these pieces, because they're so emotional and so gripping and so powerful, that you just want to hide. You don't want to be in the public anymore. You know, it's like, that's it. You want to crawl up in an embryonic position and you know, wait a while till you recover.
We'll dim the lights afterwards.
Thank you.
It'll be absolutely all right. But it's you with the Dallas, and a great pleasure, Andrew Litton, to have you on the programme as usual. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure for me.